Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
So we have to ask ourselves the question, especially as of late.
Yes.
Do we think that Nintendo is coasting on the nostalgia?
It's an interesting question because they certainly have the most nostalgia available to them.
Yes.
Pretty much everybody in gaming. But at the same time, when we worked there, there were so many examples of them not just telling us, but showing us. It's like, we do not want to be a nostalgia company. The minute you start to coast on your nostalgia, it's kind of over for you in terms of a forward-looking thing. It's like you are stuck in that era with that stuff, and that's how people will always know you. And again, they have so many opportunities with it, but they're very hesitant to dip into it. Although these days, it does feel like they're dipping into it a little bit more than they have in the past, which I think is worth discussing.
Yeah, because when we were at Nintendo, there was always the sense of like, we are a forward-looking, innovative was a word that came up all the time in terms of how they would describe themselves. And especially in the Mr. Iwata era, I think he was very anti-nostalgia, where he was always like, you know, you can never rest on your laurels. That's kind of what his view of, you know, sort of resting on nostalgia is, you're kind of reliant on it like a crutch versus thinking of new big ideas to propel you to the future. And there's so many examples that we've told, you know, stories of before of how the company is just so reluctant to celebrate their past, even though, like you were saying, out of all the video game companies, they probably have the most like amazing, interesting past out there. But, you know, we've told stories about how we've suggested like, hey, can we do some sort of look back at an older game? Can we do a historical documentary on, you know, Nintendo's past? And those were met with mockery and laughter.
Why'd we do that?
Exactly. And really just not understanding of like why people would find that interesting. Nowadays, it does seem to be a little bit different. Like, of course, they have the museum now, and there's been so many games recently. And I think we were thinking about this topic because of the recent Star Fox game. Is like, wow, it does seem like they're going back to the nostalgia well a lot more often these days.
Yeah, there's kind of this growing number of games or projects or initiatives that do feel a little bit more nostalgia-oriented than what we have seen in the past. And I think, like, we recognize they do have this business need in the modern game development era when making original games is much harder, takes much longer, is much more expensive. We're going to make some of those, but we also need something that's a little bit of a lower lift to be able to release games at the pace that we want. So in the Switch 1 generation, we had Wii U ports.
Yeah, we had Wii U ports to like
great games
for them to use and pull from.
That not a lot of people played.
Yeah.
And we can put a fresh coat of paint on those and release them on Nintendo Switch. And that was a plan that worked extremely well. Those games finally reached the audience that they deserved, and they were able to have this very big library of games that people loved. Unfortunately, most of those games have been used,
yeah,
and we can't re-release them again. There's like, if you look at like the list of Wii U games that have not been brought over, it's not a lot.
And I would say that that strategy of releasing the Wii U ports on a Switch was less focused on nostalgia, the crutch of nostalgia, and more focused on the sheer just fact that not a lot of people played those games because nobody bought a Wii U.
I mean, it wasn't even nostalgic because it was like, this game's 3 years old.
Yeah, this game is 3 years old and it's new to me. It's new to me because I didn't play this.
Exactly.
So it was not that the strategy that they're doing now, which is going back to the N64, the GameCube, even the Wii. I think the Wii is a nostalgia product now, even though we don't want to admit that.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And they're heavily focusing on, you know, these N64 remakes, starting with Star Fox, but potentially with Ocarina of Time, if that rumor turns out to be true.
Right. It does feel like, well, maybe this is the new avenue for them to update some of their legacy content, where it's like, all right, the game design work is done. The game, and we know the game is good. We can update the graphics. Maybe like in the case of Star Fox, we've added some new features.
Yes.
We've added these new cinematics. Mm-hmm. But the hard work of like, oh, let's actually create this game from scratch, that has been done for you.
You're like 80% there.
Right.
Right.
So we know Star Fox is real. Let's assume the Zelda leak for Ocarina of Time is also real. That means two of the big games of the year are going to be Nintendo 64 remakes.
Remakes, yeah.
And again, those are games that, like, unlike Mario Kart World, it's like we did not have to design those from whole cloth and do quite as much work. So on one hand, it's like I understand Nintendo's strategic need to have games like that. I would rather have more games from Nintendo than not. But I do wonder, like, what does this do to the equation of their full games lineup if a lot of these are truly older games that people of our generation have already played? And also, like, for younger players, like, do those still hold up the same way that you think they do for a new player? I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out, because some of the gameplay mechanics of that era is very different than what you would expect in the modern era of gaming. And if you don't have the nostalgic pull to sort of give you that lens to look at the game through, sometimes it could feel, perhaps for like a new person coming into it, like, oh, that gameplay feels so antiquated, you know?
Right.
You don't have the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia to look through.
And if you're Nintendo, it's easy to look at, you know, release products like this and look at their results and say, oh, this is awesome. We should definitely do more of this.
Oh, for sure.
Because those longtime fans are always going to be excited. A lot of people are excited that Star Fox is
back. We're excited for Star Fox.
Even though it is a game that we've had remade multiple times before.
People are still going to buy it.
A lot of people seem really excited at the prospects of an Ocarina of Time remake. So it's like, okay, the fans are expressing that they're happy. The reviews are probably going to be good. The games are probably going to sell. We didn't spend that much money to begin with compared to whatever the heck Mr. Aonuma and Mr. Fujibayashi are making that's going to cost a pretty penny.
Yeah.
We should do...
And take 7 years, 10 years.
Exactly. It's like, oh, we should do more of this. So it's an easy thing for them to mentally just say, like, oh, this is working, let's do more of this. But I think there is that bigger factor of, are we going too deep in this direction?
Or relying on it too
much. Of relying on the older games versus these original experiences.
Yeah, and it's so easy to rely on it so much, because it's so much less risky than the big 3D Zelda that's going to take 7 to 10 years. It's going to cost maybe upwards of $100 million. That's a scary number to say. And, you know, it's so much less risky to do that. You already have a template. You already have an audience built in for it.
So that's, you know, the game side of things. And we have the movie side of things. We're still very early days for Nintendo. We don't know anything about the Zelda movie, really. But we have two Mario movies, and we enjoyed those movies. I wouldn't say they necessarily moved the Mario franchise ahead in a new direction in any sort of a significant way. Like, let's be honest, like, they are pretty rooted in the Mario experiences that we've seen. Sometimes they're mashing a lot of things up, but that's part of the fun, is like, oh, I experienced that in a game, or I remember that for, oh, Wart's back. Yes.
I love Wart.
I have been waiting for Wart.
I do love Wart.
And I think that's fine for what they want to accomplish. Clearly, it's very financial. Again, they're getting rewarded in a lot of ways for going back to this nostalgia. But at some point, you do start to wonder, like, what is the next experience, whether it's a movie or a game or whatever, that's moving the series forward?
Yeah, I think that's another thing that's been a criticism of the Mario movies as well, is like, gosh, this is just an Easter egg hunt of nostalgic references. And that was great for us fans. You know, we really enjoyed that Easter egg hunt of nostalgic references, but it's not really bringing anything new to the characters. I think maybe just the Peach and Rosalina storyline is probably the most character development or character forward thinking that we've seen in the movie so far, but that's just one thing out of two movies.
Right.
So it is really interesting the approach they have taken, even with entertainment, they've been very heavily reliant on nostalgia and really banking on the longtime fans, which they have a lot of, to come out in support of it, which totally happened, and they made, you know, billions of dollars. So what the gamble that they took on nostalgia paid off, which is another, you know, sort of tick in the positive reinforcement box for them.
Yeah. So what is one way that you can balance out, you know, the new emphasis that's being placed on nostalgia? It's like, well, one thing you can do is you can have new IP that are bringing fresh new ideas to the market. And again, are like, okay, I have these products from Nintendo that are rooted in the past, but look, here's something completely new that's introducing a new style of game with new characters that feels really fresh. Unfortunately, it's been a while since Nintendo's really had a big new IP be a hit. Splatoon, I think, is the best example. That's 11 years old.
That's so
crazy.
Did
you know that?
It doesn't feel like it,
no,
but it is.
Because we were there when that was being introduced, and that was like, oh my gosh, it's our first new IP in a really
long time. Yeah.
And now it's been a long time again. It's not, they have tried. It's ARMS, I think, is a good example of them really in earnest making a solid attempt to make a new IP, but it just kind of didn't work.
Right.
Like, I'd love it.
I love an ARMS, too.
You're good at ARMS.
I'm very good at ARMS.
I'd be very game for a new ARMS title, but I just don't know if that's, like, a priority for them right now,
it's
unfortunately.
Risky, right? Yeah.
So we are kind of, you know, the clock is continuing to tick up. We're past a decade of where is the big new IP? And I think a lot of it goes back to this current state of development we're in, where it's, like, it's a big risk to
and
do...
And it's expensive and timely.
To do anything.
It is.
So... Yeah. If I can remake a couple Nintendo 64 games for the cost of developing from scratch this new IP that I don't know is going to work, that could be the next ARMS where it sells like, a, you know, 2 million copies and kind of sputters out. I think that's something that you need to have a conversation about.
From like a business perspective.
Yeah, for us, what is the best decision for the resources we have?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
You have to give Nintendo a little bit of credit because they did try with Dragon Drive. Like, they do have some ideas that they, new ideas that they want
to not like there's nothing.
Put out there.
Yeah.
But again, there's like kind of negative reinforcement there, right? Because they tried a new idea.
Right.
It was tied to a very exciting time for Nintendo around the Switch 2 launch. And didn't really work.
Right.
People didn't really resonate with it. So it's like, again, you're kind of giving them the negative reinforcement that like, gosh, trying new things is so risky. Even things that are smaller projects is still risky.
Right. Because
it's still resources that you took to make that Dragon Drive game.
So I think you can look at it as in a time where our business that we're in is riskier than ever, nostalgia is risk mitigation.
Exactly.
So maybe that's why we're seeing it being introduced at a higher rate than we did in the previous generations. Because it's like, we need some things that they're kind of like...
Sure things.
A sure thing?
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to be like the proverbial grand slam of a Breath of the Wild, but it's also not going to be a flame-out
like
disaster.
Bomb, yeah.
Exactly.
And they need those things that are like very risk-free to fund the risky things that to fund the 10 years of development they need for 3D Zelda, they need to have these things that are like kind of sure things.
Nintendo has plenty of money, but if you have just, you know, big...
Still can't just blow it on whatever.
If Nintendo had like a Concord-level disaster, like
that's still a big deal.
Super bad for anybody.
It's still a big deal.
Including Nintendo. Yeah. A huge problem.
Yeah.
I want to talk about... We usually hear about Disney adults.
I know. This
I want
to
talk about Nintendo adults.
Yeah.
Because
is that a thing?
I think it is.
I think
maybe
it is
not
too.
To the same degree, and maybe they're not as visible.
And Disney adults are like highly hated by people.
Yes.
Do people hate Nintendo adults as well?
I'm not super big into the world of Disney, so I don't have like a lot of direct encounters with them. But I think like one of the feelings is like they are taking away a lot of the experiences that are meant for what's supposed to be the new generation of Disney fans, and kind of hoarding it for themselves.
And that's where the dissatisfaction and the sort of the hate comes from.
Right. And on one hand, you could say, oh my gosh, Disney, look at this incredible, look at the lifelong value you have made out of these fans who will spend all of the disposable
they
income
are in your ecosystem.
They have until the day they die, probably.
They'll be buried in a Disney coffin.
And then they're going in the Disney coffin. Did you see those Nintendo coffins? I might be in the market for one
of
those.
They have Nintendo gravestones, too.
Yes.
Would you like one? I can order it now
This is getting dark.
It's a little dire.
But, so that's one way of looking at it. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, we do. We are a business. We want the next 100 years of our business. And those people are a great part of it, but we need new audiences to come up and have the opportunities to become fans. And I think there are some tough examples of this happening in the realm of Nintendo. Like, look when they tried to release the new My Mario wooden Amiibo.
And then the Nintendo adults came out and scalped it.
Just the people who showed up at the Nintendo store to buy those were like 30-year-old dudes.
Yeah, I think they were 40-year-old
dudes.
40-year-old
dudes. So it's like it's the same trap of, hey, you're making money. These people are super happy.
But this wasn't for you.
Right. These people will always be happy. But you made this to try and cultivate the next generation of fans. And now those people are kind of not letting that happen.
Yeah.
It's a really tricky situation to be in.
And Nintendo is really into this idea of getting people into the ecosystem, like introducing young fans into the ecosystem and making them stay there. And of course they love the Nintendo adults because you're the one with the money. You're the one that was cultivated from a young age and, you know, like us. And now you're a lifelong Nintendo fan and you do have disposable income to spend on entertainment and you choose to spend it on Nintendo things. But if they're never allowed to continue that cultivation for the new younger audience, that's the problem for them. The good news for them is that they have so many touch points.
Right.
Like, these younger fans can come in through a lot of different ways. Like, they can come in through the theme parks. They can come in through the movies. They are very lucky that they have that kind of ecosystem now in place to do that. So even though the Nintendo adults might be scalping a My Mario wooden amiibo, I think that their younger fans are still getting a chance to get in. But the other thing that happens too is, and we saw this with like Yoshi and the Mysterious Book, for example, is like you start to create this divide between what the product is for and who actually wants to play it. Like everybody was really mad. This is for babies. This is too easy. This is whatever.
But it might actually be for babies.
It's actually for a younger audience. But the Nintendo adults are like, well, why didn't you make Yoshi's Story
for
me?
And they're so used to being catered to, like, their entire life. Because, like, they were once kids who were enjoying kids, you know, games that were more simplistic.
Yeah.
And then they got into the more complex thing. But then they just assumed, like, oh, it's all for me.
Yes,
which
exactly.
is not the case. I think also, like, look at the price of the Switch, too. It's like, how many of these, like, younger fans have you priced out? That's why it's interesting to see, like, Tomodachi Life, which is a Switch 1 game, be as big as it was. It's like, I wonder if, like, I want to do stuff with Nintendo, but, like, I can't afford a Switch 2 yet. So, I'll play this other game that looks cool. But a lot of these things, I couldn't make the jump to get Pacopia or... Yeah, I'm not ready to drop $500 now, or who knows how much it's going to cost by the time I'm ready to buy it, because the price
maybe
you're just completely
priced out now.
Guess I'm just
going to
keep playing this Switch
until
for
you
the
can't.
Foreseeable future. So again, like a lot of this is like a conundrum because it's like there's something good, but there's kind of an underlying thing that might also be bad.
Yeah.
With it. There is also like a very vocal voice of the younger players who are like, I am ready for something that is fresh for me, for my generation. They're saying, I'm tired of just reliving the experiences that older generations have had. Yeah. They got names for this. Unkslop.
Zunkslop, yeah.
They're sick of it, and they've become more and more vocal about that.
And it feels like they are being sort of like sidelined, right? Because no experience is catered directly towards them. It's like, well, if you're in this you know, ecosystem, or you're in the fandom, we're not making experiences for your generation, for your experiences. You're just forced to not have rose-colored nostalgia glasses, but consume this content.
Hope you like stuff from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, hope you like Rail Shooters.
Because we're just remaking.
That's what we're making.
We're just remaking that for the end of time.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know what a Rail Shooter is? No, we don't care. Have fun.
And like for Nintendo, it's like, yes, you do have some things that are truly universal that will be enduring.
Yeah, of course.
But what is the experience that is going to really create that new generation of fans that is going to feel fresh, that is going to make those types of players feel like fully welcomed into the fold versus like, yeah, my older, my uncle played Star Fox 64 and I saw that and I guess that's what I can play because that's what they're putting out.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess I should be excited about it because it seems like people around me are, and Nintendo is getting the positive reinforcement on that, and so I guess that's the only thing available to me.
Yeah, so it's a business issue, it's kind of a societal issue, and this is not just a problem that Nintendo faces. Like, it's something you hear about a lot in terms of movies, where it's the same thing of, hey, to make a big movie, you need to get something that's going to get people into theaters, so it needs to be big and bombastic, but that costs a lot of money, so we cannot take a risk at all.
Even if you look at all the new trailers for movies coming out, probably 90% of it is a remake. Which is amazing.
Yeah, and then there's
amazing.
Like, wait, there's a Masters of the Universe? Like, that is the first thing that I watched when I was, like, a tiny little baby growing up. And even, I'm like, why are we
Conan the Barbarian is back?
It's like, this
we
is,
saw a trailer for that.
Seems like this should be kind of a dead IP, but I don't know who thought it was a good idea.
Desperate to redo this
versus coming up with a fresh idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like and these remakes hit. Like, that Devil Wears Prada,
I'm
too.
I'm not sure that one's
going to hit. It was a hit, you know?
That was a hit, yeah.
Like, this is what they do. It's like, you know, Disney does the same thing, too. They bring things out of the vault. They remake. They do a live-action version of a movie from the 90s.
Right.
Like, these are the things that are risk-free for them.
Right, right. So, again, like, you know, we are of the generation that came up with all that stuff.
Yeah.
We enjoy seeing it come back, for sure.
Sure.
But I think, you know, Nintendo is not going to be true to itself unless it is surprising us.
Yeah.
To some degree. And it's not to say they can't surprise us with a new game in an older franchise. I just hope that they can maintain the right amount of balance in their games lineup going forward and not just fall into this trap that we're seeing so much of the industry and be being scared of trying something different. That would be a real shame if Nintendo also went down that path.
Like a truly creative company like Nintendo, that would be so sad if they kind of buried that part of themselves away because they were too scared to take the risk.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't connect with Dragon Drive, but I really applaud them for doing a game like that. So I hope that Nintendo, you know, it doesn't have to be a big new major new IP, but I love to see them experiment with smaller ideas, like the Box Boys, the Jump Rope Challenge, the fun little games like that.
Yeah.
You know, some of them hit, some of them don't.
Yeah.
But like, that's the kind of like quirky Nintendo creative experience that like makes the company so special. So I hope that there's balance in that way, and I think that's a pretty risk. It's like an okay risk thing. It's like a smaller project, so you don't feel like, oh gosh, I've been developing, you know, ARMS for 5 years and then it fizzled out so quickly. That's a shame.
Right.
So hopefully they have more of that in the pipeline. That's my hope for them.
Yeah, and I don't think we're saying like, oh, it's a point, this is catastrophic, this can never be come back from. It's like we're just kind of starting to get a feeling that things might be headed in that direction, and it's something we're gonna keep our eye on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, what do you think? Are you someone that is super, super excited for Nintendo to dive more into their nostalgic historic past, or are you the one that is like wishing for some new fresh ideas? Let us know in the comments. And we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Some crimes are never forgotten, others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.